So let's give an overview of what I guess we'll try to accomplish over here in this shiur, and then we can figure out, you know, if we want to schedule more shiurim and, like, you know, what should be addressed, what should be focused on, because each one of these topics are very expansive, and you can give many one-hour shiurim on each one of them if you want to really go into the depth of each one of them. So it'll be better if we could, you know, figure out what we want to focus on, and we can move forward in that way. So we're going to concentrate this shiur on how to classify pikuach nefesh. When do we decide that a situation is truly life-threatening, and thereby what treated as life-threatening is regarding Hilchos Shabbos, which would mean we would stop at nothing, basically, to resolve the problem and to go to the hospital and do whatever needs to be done. And the inherent difficulty with this is that you're always faced with an interesting sort of contradiction of concepts when it comes to pikuach nefesh, which is, on one hand, you're not supposed to ask a shaila when it comes to a question of pikuach nefesh. And Chazal says, we'll see soon, if you ask a shaila about pikuach nefesh, that's considered to be, you know, wrong, and it's supposed to be discouraged. And actually, the rav of the city is to be reprimanded that he hasn't already given a shir on the inyan to teach everybody that it shouldn't be added. We'll see, it's actually a halacha. Whereas on the other hand, Shabbos is Shabbos, you know, and if something truly isn't a question of pikuach nefesh, then you're faced with a question of a very serious transgression, chayiv karis. So you always have to wrestle with that, and when it's not a cut and dry question, cut and dry clear pikuach nefesh, and it's a suffix, yes, it's a suffix, and suffix we generally do say do it anyway, but at what point do we draw the line? So that's what we're going to try to address. We're going to take a look at how Chazal and Halacha treat it, how medicine treats it, not that, you know, I have so much proficiency in that, but what typically would be considered by medicine, and see if we can draw a parallel. So just to read through quickly what the general topics that we could address. So we're over here, every situation of possible life-threatening emergency brings rise to four questions, in other words, basic questions, which we'll try to address in this and subsequent shiurim. Number one, which is what we'll try to address in this shiur, is which ailments qualify as life-threatening in halacha? Is a threat to a limb included? Meaning to say, if, you know, any damage happened to a particular limb, and if you don't treat it, it'll result in loss of that limb, how is that viewed in halacha? Is that pikuach nefesh? What level of risk qualifies as life-threatening? What percent? 5% chance, 10% chance, how do we look at that? What number already brings it to the threshold of pikuach nefesh? What role does the doctor play, and what is the rav's role? What does the doctor need to tell the rav? What does the rav need to know? And when shouldn't you even ask? Because, like I said before, the situations where you just don't ask any questions and go. So that's what we're going to try to address, some of that, in this year. Number two is what may be done in the event of an emergency, and in what manner should it be done? And this is a very also expansive topic, which covers a number of issues. Number one, when do you have to ask a non-Jew for help? What situations require you to do it yourself? And the opposite, you should not ask a non-Jew to do it. You should specifically do it yourself. And also, when does a shino need to be employed? When do you have to do things differently? When does the shino even help? You know, there are different things that it doesn't even help to do backwards. And that, obviously, we're not going to get to in this shiur, but perhaps in a later shiur. Number three is, for whom may one be Michal Shabbos? Non-Jew, non-religious Jew, an embryo. So, you know, all those, a fetus, I mean. And does it make a difference if one is a doctor or is an EMT or a regular person? Meaning to say, if a doctor won't treat someone, obviously that'll make a much bigger, have a much bigger effect and a ripple effect on the mass media than if just, you know, an unqualified person didn't do something. It won't have as much of a chilul Hashem. And number four is, what can be done after finishing treatment as a doctor, filling out charts, marking down information, signing prescription, you know, everything that's necessary to make a institution like a hospital run. You know, they can't rely on memory, and they can't rely on word of mouth and telling other people to do things. It has to be done by the doctor. And how and what is allowed and what should be done differently, what options are there. And lastly, what can be done in order to return home? You know, can you drive yourself? Can you? Do you have to take a taxi? And so on and so forth. Again, something that will be addressed in a later shiur. Okay, so the first thing, as an introduction, we just have to know in halacha there are five categories. That's B. There are five categories of how we distinguish different types of ailments. To go through them quickly, number one is pikuach nefesh, life-threatening ailments. Number two is when a limb or even a part of a limb is at risk, which is called sakana sever. And sakana sever means that not necessarily you're going to lose the limb, but you're going to lose the functionality of the limb. Someone will become blind. It doesn't mean his eye has to fall out, but he'll lose sight, or a finger will become paralyzed, or will become partially paralyzed, or he'll lose part of the usage of his finger. That also qualifies as sakana sever, which is its own category in Hilcha Shabbos. Likewise, this can be extended to where the limb has other purposes. For example, a scar across the face is treated by many paiskim also as a sakana sever, being that part of the purpose of the face is to look good, you know, and project your persona. So that also is treated as many paiskim as a sakana sever. So it is pretty clear, the guidelines, but there is some room for movement, you know, as you try to flex what the purpose of an aver is. Number three is a non-life-threatening illness, which is called a chayla she'ein by sakana, but at the same time it's chayla kal gufai, which means that he's sick enough that he would need to go to bed, even if he perhaps is not. Many times certain ailments, it doesn't even help to go to bed, sometimes even worse if you go to bed. But it's, in other words, it's so debilitating that he would take off from work, or he would take off from whatever it is he's doing and stop his activities to just rest. That's a chayla she'ein by sakana. Number four is mechush ba'alma, which is just any other discomfort and pain which doesn't incapacitate you. And lastly, five is an interesting category, which not everybody agrees to, but most places can work with this. It's sargala, which is that even if it's not really knocking you out, so to speak, it doesn't cause you to stop your activities. However, it causes you such a large amount of pain. It's sargala. It's not. It goes out of the category of a mechosh, which is like a minor discomfort, like you know, like a little cut or a heartburn or something like that, and it becomes a stomach ache, which envelops you. You know, so whereas it doesn't really, you don't have to stop your activities, you can continue doing what you're doing, but it's so painful that you need to take some sort of a medicine to prevent the pain. That's also its own category with its own halachas. So now let's look at just the sources. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Interesting that at least in the study that I have done, they don't really refer to, let's say, the chazaka of the person's, you know, shlemus, for instance. We don't normally talk about hospice or gosis.
Uh-huh.
So will you be discussing?
Yes, that would be in the second, rather the third category, you know, when we discuss who we can be mechal Shabbos for, you know, when someone's in that category, what you can do for him, what that you're obligated to do for him. So let's look at some of the sources for this. So if you turn to the first page, this is Simon Shin Kaf Ches in Hilchos Shabbos, which is the Simon which is dedicated to Hilchos Refua. So if you look at, well, let's start from the beginning. Aleph is Mishi Yesh Lai Mechosh Ba'alma, someone who has just a small discomfort, V'hu Mischazik V'hoylech Kabari, but he's able to still to strengthen himself and walk around like a wild person. Also, lo lasa shum refuah, he's not allowed to do any sort of healing process. Afilo aydei an Yehudi, even to ask a non-Jew to help him. Gezer mishum shchikas hamamonim, because Chazal prohibited any form of refuah because of the gezer of shchikas hamamonim. This is an interesting discussion. Again, not for now. That nowadays we don't really, no one is able even to do that anymore. No one has the ability to create any medicine anymore. So would these gezeres still apply? There, it's one of those things that Paiskim use as a tziruf, you know. If you have another reason to be mekel, so you can always add that in. That's because there are the Tzais HaShulchan, who is Rav Chaim Na, you know, is famous for his shiurim. He also wrote a sefer Tzais HaShulchan on Shulchan Aruch. So he says that tzad heter, so it's always something that can be used as an additional heter. So, Beis.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
I would understand if he just said that, you know, it's us for him to take a pill,
mm-hmm.
But he says us to do any refuah.
That's correct.
And does that mean, you know, you can't even, let's say, apply a sling to somebody whose arm is causing them some discomfort? Would
okay.
that be in the Gzeros Chisamon?
So that's a good question. A sling, per se, would not be a problem to apply, but it does refer to any other action which can be very much identified as refuah. For example, certain forms of massaging, exercising, applying things that aren't necessarily medicine, like rubbing oil on certain parts of your body, which, if it's very clear that it's being done lerfuah, it's going to be usur as well. That's why he's including everything, not just specifically taking medicine, but all other acts which are done only, typically only for refuah, they're included as well. Okay, so that's the base. So this is what I was saying before. Mishi Yesh L'Chayosh L'Sakana, someone who does have, you see, the Mechaber, right after he introduced the Isser of taking medicine on Shabbos, immediately he goes to this, you know, don't make any mistake. You know, Mishi Yesh L'Chayosh L'Sakana, someone who does have a Chayosh L'Sakana, Mitzvah L'Chal L'Ovas Shabbos, it's a mitzvah to be Mechal Shabbos, it's a mitzvah of Chay Behem, L'Samad Al Dam Re'echa, V'Hazar is, and someone who's quicker to do it, Hareza Meshubach, V'hashoyel, and someone who asks a question, Hareza Shayfich Damim, his Ritzach, by asking and delaying. So this is what always makes the tension when it comes to any of these questions. So look at Sif Katan Vav over here in the Mishnah Brura. I underlined it. Pirish. Oisei ha'ish, this person, shehu mischaseid, he's trying to be a chaseid, he's trying to be from. V'yarei, and he's scared, l'chal Shabbos, b'chayla kezei, he doesn't want to be m'chal Shabbos in this type of sickness. Ki imayidei moira, without being told to do so by a rav. Harehu shefech damim, he's a shefech damim. Sheba'oichu hu ha'ilch lishol, because as he's going to ask, yechla shachayla yoisei, the chayla will get sicker. V'yuchal lehistaken, and he could come to a sakana. So in other words, even if nothing happened, you're also a ritzeach. Even if nothing ended up happening, he's saying, it's still a shayfech damim, by allowing such a situation, to putting yourself into a sakana, to allowing a possible sakana to arise. Re'a kasev oimer, and the pasuk says, le'samad al dam re'acha. Rishalmi Isa, and Rishalmi it says, hanishal, someone who was asked, hareza maguna. Pirish, mishum sha talmud chacham b'mkaimai, a talmud chacham in his place, ha'ile lidrish b'pirka, that should be one of his first shiurim, l'chol, to everybody, k'dei sh'yedu kalam, everybody should know, v'lo yitztarchu l'shal, they shouldn't have to ask him. V'machayla ba'atzmei misyorei, and if the chayla himself is scared, sh'yavru olav es ha'shabbos, that he doesn't want them to be mechal Shabbos for him, k'yfin I say, you force him, u'medabra ma'libai, and you convince him, shehu chasidus shal shtos.
The bare hatred says the same thing.
That's right, right. So there's a quote from there. Interesting, I was looking online, you know, Hatzalah has a few different websites, different Hatzalahs, and one of them, they write that they find it always fascinating that someone calls them to come down on Shabbos because it's hard, you know, difficulty breathing or etc. And they come down and they check out the patient and they decide he has to go to the hospital. And then they refuse. They say, no, we can't go to the hospital on Shabbos. They said, you called us. You told us to drive down to you, but you're not going to go to the. You're not going to get into the car and go to the hospital on Shabbos. But it's not an unusual thing. It's not an unusual thing. People tend to be like that. They say, "I'm not going to go in a car on Shabbos." You know, that's all, guys. Go in a car. So it's so it's an important thing to convince. See, it's interesting. He says two things. He says, "Kaifin Isa," you force him, and "Medaber Malibay." What he means to say is that sometimes you can make him. You can endanger him by just forcing him, you know, literally, physically forcing him. And you don't have that option sometimes. You know, if he's an older person, your only option is to convince. Okay, so this is the source for, number one, that a mechosh ba'alma, you can't do anything. And B, if it's a chayli sheyesh b'sakana, in other words, a very imminent sakana, you can't even ask. It's not even right to ask. Now let's move on to the next page here.
Yeah, I don't see that. This widespread shiurim in definitions of pikuach nefesh. And I've been living here 18 years, I haven't heard a shiurim.
Surprising, no?
It was a Sunday morning a couple of months ago that Rabbi Rosenbaum led.
Yeah.
Right, he did something. He did
right
before I came.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, but it's, you know, based on this, it seems that would be like...
That should be one of the first ones, 100%. I was just speaking with... a different Rav in the community, and he was relating to me two stories that just happened in his kehila, where he came to the recognition that he needs to address it. You know, there's confusion. Oh, so let's move on. So now, the Sif Yud Zayin, if you ever do want to learn Simen Shin Chav Ches, the order, correct order to learn Simen Shin Chav Ches is not to start from the beginning. You start from Sif Yud Zayin, because that's, it takes a long time for the Mechaber to get up to it, but that's where he really puts down all the Klalim, and then like everything else really works, radiates out of that. So Sif Yud Zayin says, Chayla Shenafal Amishkav, a Chayla that fell into bed, Machmas Chayli, because of his sickness, Mishkav, he fell because of his sickness at the bed. Ve'im b'sakana, but he's not life-threatening. Haga, ayishiyesh lai mechush, or he has some affliction, shemitzta'er, that's causing him a lot of pain. V'cholam imenu kol gufay, and as a result, his whole body feels weaker. Sh'oz, afal pisha haylech, even though he's able to walk, kenafa l'mishkav dami. This is a little unclear what this means, but to keep it simple, what it sounds like it means is that one person is literally sick, like the old-fashioned sick, he has fever, he's in bed, you know, etc., he can't move, and the other person has a particular pain, an ailment, let's say a stomach ache, a headache, or something particular which is bothering him, and even though he can walk around, but it's really bad enough that he would really want to lie down. Ayrim la'en Yehudi lasas le'refuah. So once you've reached that level, that you're a chayla shein besakana, you have permission to tell a guy straight out, you don't have to be meramez, you don't have to beat around the bush, you can tell him straight, even a malacha deraisa, you don't have any of the restrictions. You can tell a guy to do whatever needs to be done. Avalei mechal anavza Shabbos b'issa deraisa, but you are not allowed to be mechal Shabbos with an issa deraisa, afilo yesh besakana saver, even if there is a sakana saver. So a sakana saver does not permit a chayla Shabbos. Now, before we go further, I will say there are some Rishonim, which are not brought down in Beis Yosef, but there are Rishonim in the Meiri, a number of other Rishonim, that say that you could be Mechal Shabbos for a Sakana Sefer. There is also a line in a Tosfos, which is debated whether the Girsa should be changed, but there is a line in the Tosfos that also seems to say that for a Sakana Sefer you could be Mechal Shabbos. And as we'll go on, we'll see that it's also used, even though typically the rule is that if a Rishon has not been quoted in Beis Yosef, it can't be used. But in this situation, obviously, the severity of the situation, when we come to a situation where there's a question of a Sakanas Eiver and there's possibilities of Sakanas Nefashos, or even if not, there are other things you can use as a Heter, we throw that in as well. That, in other words, some Rishonim hold that even for a Sakanas Eiver, you're allowed to do an Issa D'oraisa. But the main halacha, as it says here, is that for a Sakana Sefer, simply put, if it's just a question of a Sakana Sefer, the only thing at risk is the Eiver, nothing else, you can't do an Issa D'oraisa.
So specifically for like an ophthalmologist,
mm-hmm.
who's only dealing with one Eiver
right.
the whole time, is there any particular significance to the eye?
So the eye actually has its own category, which we'll get to, okay. which is interesting. But let's say, let me give you a different case. If someone, let's say the case I mentioned before, someone got a cut on his face, right? And they managed to stem the bleeding, but it'll damage his whole appearance, right? So let's call, we would call that a sakana saver. Or someone, lo'aleinu, part of his finger got chopped off, right? And he went to a doctor, the bleeding has been controlled, and now it's just a question if you want to sew it back on, you have a limited amount of time to do it. And that's the only thing at risk is just the, you know, a doctor has determined the only thing at risk is just the loss of that finger. That would be just a sakana sefer, where you would not be allowed to do an iser d'oraisa. A Jew himself would not be allowed to do an iser d'oraisa, and you would have to work around. Obviously, that's a very serious situation. And almost always, in the cases I'm aware of, there is a way to work with it, you know, but that's, halacha is that you cannot be mechal Shabbos. Now, that have being said, a Sakanas Eiver does not have the same status as a regular person who's sick. A Sakanas Eiver is much more serious. And I'm not going to read through the whole next part of the Mechaber. You can see it on your own. He gives three different opinions. Let's just look at the Mishnah Berurah, who sums it up. That's Eisen Zayin. I underlined it. Hasvara Hashlishis, Hainu, Shemutr Lasois, Afilo Kol Hashvusim, another Jew himself, not just a non-Jew, even a Yid, can do anything that's Durabanan. Varak al Yidei Shinui, Imhu Choylakala Gof, that's if someone is sick, just regular sickness, you can do anything Durabanan, but you have to do it with a Shinui. The aim by Sakana Sefer, but im yesh by Sakana Sefer, if there's a question of Sakana Sefer, ein sar shinui klal. You can do any drabanan going out of the tchum, you know, mukta, etc. Anything which is a drabanan can be done for a Sakana Sefer, and you don't need to do any shinui. Kach pasko hataz, mangan ram, kach asvagra, shadezu ikashura das rabbi paiskim. So So the categories would be as follows. Sakanas nefashis, obviously, you can do everything. Sakanas eiver, which you know is not sakanas nefashis. A yid can't do a malacha deraisa, but he can do any durabanan without having to do a shina. He can do any durabanan. And obviously, this is going to now bring up the question, what's a durabanan, what's a deraisa, how do we treat electricity? And, you know, all that is going to have to be discussed. And then, lastly, you have a chayla kal haguf, which is not a sakana saver, there's no limit risk, but he's sick, he's truly sick, where you can tell a guy to do anything, and you can do a durabanan as well, as long as you employ a shinui. Right, so we're the last category will be some other share. That's a very also expansive category. A chayla, a person, a typical sick person. How do you deal with them? What could you do? How do you do it? Etc. But in this share, what's important for us is that a sakanas nefashis, you can do everything. Sakanas eiver, you can do only drabanans, but a deraisa, you have to get a guy. You can't do a deraisa on your own, or you can do a shinui, which would then bring it down to a drabanan. But again, you'd have to know how to do that. You'd have to do a shinui where it works, so that would bring it down to Rabbanan. But any Rabbanan can be done.
The implication also, go ahead. The Mishnah Berurah brings out just earlier, and calls about if it's no geah with koach nefesh.
Correct.
So the notion is that you really have to do multiple examinations.
100%.
So if you have aimbow, you know, kind of like suffix sakana or suffix guf or suffix aver, and then over time you get the feeling that it is no geah,
mm-hmm.
then you have to change your opinion.
100%.
And it's saying that they, you know,
yeah, as when it starts touching on a question, as soon as it touches on a question of pikuach nefesh, that changes the whole landscape. Okay. Now, let's move along. Now, the next question, so if you just turn back for a moment to the original... the outline. Take a look at letter at C. So I just, you know, we've spoken through this, but I just want to read through it. There are four levels of Chilul Shabbos which are allowed depending on the circumstance. Issa d'oraisa would be driving a car, turning on lights. I specifically wrote turning on lights. I meant, you know, not a fluorescent, but an incandescent, because that most places can agree is a d'oraisa. And writing. So those would be, we know, only by pikuach nefesh, and issur d'rabbanan, using muksa, taking medicine, going out of the tchum. So that is allowed out of hand for a sakanas eiver. A shinui, doing either an issur d'oraisa or a d'rabbanan in an unconventional manner with an elbow, etc. So that is allowed for a chayla kal haguf. Asking a non-Jew, likewise, is giving a direct request to a non-Jew to either a issur d'oraisa or a d'rabbanan. That also is allowed across the board for a chayla kal haguf or for a sakanas eiver, and obviously for pikuach nefesh. Okay, so let's proceed into D. Let me just read through the three questions over here, and then we'll take them apart one by one. Pikuach nefesh, who makes the call? Which means, who decides and how do you decide? So number one, guidelines of halacha. Clear danger to life. What percentage or probability of danger qualifies? Now, the question here is as follows. To give you an example, what I mean is as follows. A woman that has had a C-section, let's say one C-section, right? And now the accepted practice nowadays is that they will allow a vaginal birth after a C-section. Once she's had two C-sections, I don't know if things have changed, but from what I know, that it will not. Traditional medicine won't allow a woman to have a vaginal birth after two C-sections. What changes from one C-section to two C-sections? So after one C-section, the risk of the uterus collapsing and rupturing is only 1%. After two, it's 5%. That's the difference. Again, this is what a doctor told me, you know, when it was relevant. I don't know if the numbers have changed, but that's the basic idea. So I remember asking a firm doctor in L.A., I said, I don't understand, 5%? That doesn't sound that bad. I mean, 5% is, that's not so such a big possibility. Why would they change the whole, you know, why would they not allow vaginal birth just because of a 5% chance? So he said, you also have to realize how bad it is to have the uterus rupture. He says you have to work very, very quickly to save the woman's life. You know, the loss of blood within a couple of minutes can cause her to die. And you said, like everything else in medicine, it depends on what your options are. Being that there is an option of a C-section, so 5% is already enough of a risk that no doctor will agree to take that risk and rather take a safer and tried and true method of doing a C-section. So what I'm trying to say is that the numbers are all relative. In other words, there's a 5% chance, a 10% chance. That doesn't really mean anything per se. What it all is in is all relative to what you're risking. What's at risk, right? And what you stand to do by doing. So when it comes to the halachas of pikuach nefesh, we have to now know how did Chazal treat it. Now we have a rule: safik pikuach nefesh, even ein halachim bepikuach nefesh achar harayv. Right. So we have a rule: we don't go after rayv with pikuach nefesh. Now, where does the actual Gemara say that rule? The Gemara says that rule where a wall collapsed on someone, and either 9 out of 10 times he won't have survived, it's a very small chance he'll survive, or he might not even be there. You don't even know if he's under this wall, like the whole house collapsed, and you're not even sure if he's here. So, Eim Halchem Pikuch Nefesh Acharayv, you dig up the wall anyway. Now, if we were to apply that carte blanche, you know, to all cases, we'll say, okay, well, every time someone gets a cut, there is some minute risk of severe infection, and it should allow you to be Mechal Shabbos, right? I was reading about a case study, some guy in England that he cut his finger moving a computer, and 3 weeks later he was admitted into the hospital. He started some paralysis. He contracted some sort of a bacteria which then attacked his spine. And then he went into severe sepsis, so everything shut down, and all from a little cut. So, yeah, but you know that happened to one person. That wouldn't even be considered a risk, right? You'd know it would send someone to the hospital for a little cut. But if we say, and even a miut of a miut, so where do we draw the line? What's the rule? How do we apply the rule? Right? So let's look at our number four over here. We'll go through a few marmakaimis, and this is what is really mainly we're going to try to address, you know, figure out how, when someone comes running to you on Shabbos and says, you know, doctor, should I go to the hospital? How are you supposed to look at it? How are you supposed to treat it? So here, the first that's listed as number four is the first page of Shmir Shabbos Gal Chasa, Perek Lamed Beis, which is about Dine Pikuach Nefesh. So we're in the footnote, and I underline just a few things that he quotes here. First, he quotes, Ayin Chazanish, Ahalos, Simen Chav Beis, Sivkal Lamed Beis, Divra Maschal B'Pizkei Tshuva, Deloy mikri safik pikuach nefesh bedvar ma'asidim. We don't call something a safik pikuach nefesh because of a future danger. Shebahoy ve'ein lahem kol zecher, that at the current situation, in the current state, there isn't even anything that you can see that would indicate that that's going to happen. Ve'hilkach ein donim b'shvil asidus v'chayke. That is the reason why we don't treat as pikuach nefesh just because of a possibility, a future distant possibility, and we don't treat it as pikuach nefesh. So that's number one. Now skip ahead here.
It's important, yeah. The word chokin or chokos, because some people with like a immunodeficiency, a small infection for them right now,
right,
they're fine.
Can change the situation very rapidly, you're saying. You know, they're risk.
Eventually,
Right. Okay, that's important. Look at the next piece over here. V'shamati mehagoyin or shlomi zalman arbach zetzal. D'yesh loymar, that maybe you can make a distinction as follows. And we'll see the next piece is a whole tshuva from Rav Shlomi Zalman, so we'll see a little bit more at length how he explains this. But this is what he quotes. D'yesh loymar dehechi shaharoidif, meaning to say the machla, the actual disease, kvar nimsa bugafadim, or the affliction or the cut or whatever it is, he already has it. And now we're trying to figure out how bad is it, how much it will affect him, you know, what's the situation, what's the severity of it. Then any suffix is already pikuach nefesh because it's here, and we just don't know how to look at it. So if you have any sort of reason to believe it's dangerous, you can send him to the hospital. Ula, loy mikri roidev. It's not called a roidev that he's being chased, so to speak. Elam kain matzavoy shal hachoylo hoylach v'ra, unless he is getting sicker and he's deteriorating. Masha ain kaimim ain shinui. But if you see that nothing has changed. So whatever it was that was afflicting him previously obviously has stopped. Therefore you can't be Mechal Shabbos. im yoidim bar, if you know clearly, she'afshar lidchais es atipol lamachar belishim nazik, if you can push off the treatment tomorrow without any adverse effect. So this is a little bit ambiguous, not being exactly clear about what he's trying to say, but the basic idea we get, right? The basic idea what he's saying is that the problem has to be in front of you. Fine. Then he's saying, now, even if the problem is in front of you, you also have to know that the problem is affecting him. So we need to say, someone is a cancer patient, Leilena. So he has a disease which is Pekanis Nefashis, nothing to talk about. That doesn't mean, though, that that disease is always affecting him. He's deteriorating over a long span of time, and he needs to be treated, and etc. But in this particular Shabbos, whatever it is that's wrong with him is not necessarily being attributed to his deteriorating state of cancer. So he has this disease, and then on Shabbos he doesn't feel good, right? And you know, as far as, like, for the past 3 weeks, you know, there has been no progression, it has stalled, nothing has changed. So as far as you can see, nothing has changed as far as his disease is concerned. And this, that he doesn't feel good, would, by anybody else, you would typically say, okay, you know, you don't have to rush to the hospital, you can wait till Matzah Shabbos and check it out and see what it is. So the fact that he is sick shouldn't necessarily change your view. Now obviously, if, as a doctor, you think there is a relationship, then of course, you know, then. But if you don't see any particular relationship, what he means to say is, even though he does possess a disease that renders him a chelesh yesh besakana, being that that's not affecting him right now, that doesn't give you the green light to just send him to the hospital for anything. That's what he's trying to say. I'll explain it a little bit more in this tshuva, we'll see. Then the last, and this is a very interesting thing, Ayin Shut Binyan Siyan Simon Lamed Zayin, Shtekol She'ato Ein Kam Pikuach Nefesh. Now the Binyan Siyan was the Aruch Lener, you know, lives in Germany. So he says, the Kol She'ato Ein Kam Pikuach Nefesh, there's no immediate Pikuach Nefesh, Rak, just, She'esh Lachush L'Sakana Ha'alula Lavai, you just have to worry about a future Sakana, Bezeh Lina Basa Ruba, there you do go with Raiv, Kamayla in Yisura, similar to what you do when it comes to Isser. Okay? So let me give you an example, right? A classic example is a cut, right? Someone got a jagged cut, all his tetanus shots are up to date, so you're not worried about tetanus. You're worried about infection, right? Now, infection is something which is Asad Lava. It's not something which he has now. But there's a risk of infection, right? It's a risk of something that would happen. So he says, Ein halchum epikuach nefesh aharoiv doesn't apply. Here, you would go basaroiv because it's a future event. Now, like I said before, let's think about this for a minute. Does that mean that we can only allow someone with a cut to go to the hospital if 50% of the time this situation turns out to be epikuach nefesh? That sounds ridiculous, right? Even 20%, you would rush him to the hospital, right? Even 10%, you would rush a person to the hospital. That doesn't make sense. It can't possibly be that you have to wait until Raiv, you know, that 50% or 52% of the time this is life-threatening. No one would ever allow you to come even close to that. Right? So it's an interesting statement that he's making. He's saying if it's a future issue, if it's not a current issue, if the pikuach nefesh is a future issue, then we don't have this rule of Ein Halchan Achar Raiv. It's hard to understand. It can't possibly be true. Right? So it's not. So obviously, what the word roiv needs to be redefined, right? So roiv over here doesn't mean percentages, and it doesn't mean 51% of the time. It means something else. So what does it mean? So let's turn to the next page, and we'll get a good idea. Yeah, sure.
The notion is there ain't shinui, right?
I'm sorry?
Is there a shinui, is there no shinui?
Right, is he changing?
How is the person progressing? One of the ways that we sometimes do it in medicine is, what if I do something, or what if I do nothing?
Right.
Okay, so a person can come in, hospital of what we call, you know, an acute abdomen and so forth and so forth. You decide whether it's a surgical abdomen or a medical abdomen, and you say, well, I could do this or I could do that. And then you look at the ratio of the two. So like in the case of the C-section,
right.
C-section is actually safer than vaginal births.
Right.
Okay, in terms of, and it's right. Crazy, but
yeah. What it is. Seems strange.
Right. It seems strange, but that's right. What it is, because we have, you know, quality care, right. and surgery and so forth and so forth. So if you look at the ratio of doing the C-section, or let's say not doing the C-section with, you know, multiple previous C-sections, versus the odds ratio of the two could be maybe 1,000 to 1 in mm-hmm. terms of there'll be some deficit to the
right
to the fetus in terms of, you know, loss of oxygen and so forth. Here, the question is, you know, if you cut yourself, what happens if I do nothing? What happens if I take them to the hospital in terms of the long run? So it's a kind of a notion of Rove, but it's like an odds ratio of what you would intend or what you expect to happen based on, as he said before, the ambushing.
What sort of changes happening?
There's a certain constancy,
right,
and so forth.
All right, so let's see. So let's see if we can figure out, you know, how to proceed here. So let's turn to the next page. This is Tshuva Mincha Shleima, Chelek Beis, Simcha Chavtes, or Shleima Zalman. This is the last paragraph here. A second to last paragraph. Le'inyan, right? Le'inyan Iker Hadavar. Ma Nikra Safik Pikuch Nefesh. So your main question was, what do we consider Safik Pikuch Nefesh? Uma Loya, what not? Va'ad Eifa Hu Hagvula. Until where is the... is the limit of this? Egam anoichi ba'ani, myself as well. Histapakti tuva b'zeh. I have a very big suffix about this. Elo shemitzara svara nirlani is daiti. Svara, I think as follows: the kol shederech roiv bnei adam l'roich mizeh. If it's normal for most people to avoid this, kibareich bnei sakana, because they treat it as a danger, harezech choshev kesafik b'kuch nefesh. Then we can treat it as a suffix b'kuch nefesh. And then we will apply the pasuk of v'chai behem v'loshi yamas behem. Avalim ein roiv bnei adam nivhalim umefachtem izeh. If this is something that most people aren't scared about, ein zechash v'sakana, it's not chash v'sakana, it's not considered a sakana. Now he gives a very interesting example. K'tzaz dugma l'zeh, har kavas, excuse me, zreikas avabuas li'yoladim. So the smallpox inoculation for children. Even though it could be mitzad hadin, efshar shetzrichim be'emez, lehizdaris v'lasoysay behektim efshar. Really, you should inoculate your children as quickly as possible from this possible disease. Im haroifa oimer shekvar higias man lasoysay. He tells you your child is, you know, ready, 4 or 5, whatever the age is, he needs his shots. Ach afal pikein ein regilin klal lasoysim bebehil sebezruzes. But it's not treated amongst the world as something that needs to be rushed. Whatever, when you make your appointment, whenever the next appointment is available, you do it. Or you push it off, you do it when you're available. L'fikach, afen be'emes yesh b'zeh k'tzasagon, even though there is certainly some element of risk, havale k'moshe amru chazal v'ha'idna shemer p'sayim Hashem. They say, you know, nowadays, shemer p'sayim Hashem, everybody treats this in a certain way, you don't have to get nervous about it. V'chalil l'chal Shabbos avarokach, and you certainly should not be mechal Shabbos because of that. What if you are somewhere out in Africa, you know, if you don't grab the opportunity now, you don't take care of this smallpox vaccine, it won't be available for you for another 4 or 5 years. So then, even the bezman maruba kazev v'adin nivhalim, you don't want to be without vaccine for 4 or 5 years. V'adin nivhalim mafachtem l'shoyis efshe d'shapar chashve kipikuch nevedecha shabbos. So his rule of thumb is: how does the world approach the situation during the weekday? Is this something that would make you nervous? Is this something that would cause you to panic and to seek emergency medical treatment? In other words, if it wouldn't be shabbos, would you go to the emergency room? Or if it wouldn't be Shabbos, you'd do the same thing. You'd walk and go to a doctor. So the doctor said, you have to. He says, oh, could I wait until like this is not so many people in the emergency room? And you know, you take the same cavalier approach where you don't feel so rushed. So, which is an interesting thing. Again, this seems to be more like talking to a layman and saying, what am I supposed to do? I'm not a doctor. I don't know what to do. So how am I supposed to know when is it I'm not supposed to ask and when of them I am supposed to ask? So if you have chest pains, every layman knows, okay, you don't ask. You know, you just run to the, because that's what you do in the weekday too. You just jump into a car and get to the hospital as soon as you can. Whereas if it's something which is not as scary, then you take your time. You know, the child fell, he hurt himself, he's crying. Did he break a bone? Didn't he break a bone? So you'll make your rounds before you finally, you know, sit in the emergency room for 6-7 hours, right? You'd push it off. So that's good for a layman. Doesn't help a doctor to know, well, he does know what's going on, and now how should he evaluate it? He's in the hospital, so to speak, already, and now he wants to know how to evaluate this. Should we look at this as sakanas nefashos, and should we not sakanas nefashos? It doesn't help us so much, right? But what he did put into perspective is that the roiv, again, is treated differently. You see, this is not a cut-and-dry roiv. It's more how... it's looked at, how it's perceived, and likewise we can apply that to doctors as well. Like I was saying before, it doesn't have to be 50% of people will die from this before you send them to the hospital, where what a doctor will consider a risk, a life-threatening risk, can be as little as 5%, but coupled with the fact of the possible outcome and the possible, the threat, and with the fact that there's such an easy solution to take it away, that would be enough that for a doctor already to consider something life-threatening. And I think that's the way a doctor has to look at it. Right? So in other words, when you look at a situation which has a potential life-threatening aspect, so when you're talking about infection, so if you know, it could be standard medical procedure is, you do this so in order to avoid infection, but you know from personal experience that the chances of infection are really, really minute. And it doesn't worry you. Like, you wouldn't be worried if the person would wait until Matzah Shabbos, till he goes to the hospital, so then that's the way you should approach it. Then you can't really consider it pikuach nefesh. Whereas, if it does concern you, even if it concerns you just partially, you don't know for sure, but you think there is an element of concern, then you would be able to send them just on that alone. That would be the rule of thumb over here. Interestingly, once this happened, where are we holding with Mincha? Everybody has to daven? And what time is Mincha and Shomer? You know?
In 8 minutes.
In 8:25, you said? Okay, fine. So I'll stop in 2-3 minutes. Once, you know, there was a story in my yeshiva. I wasn't there, but I heard about it. A boy walked into a metal pole, got a huge gash on his head, and it was Shabbos. It was Friday night. It was like just began Shabbos. So the hatzal was called. The hatzal came. And they treated him, you know, on the spot. And then they said, look, you know, your cut needs to be stitched up. And they brought him to a doctor, and who did, you know, a Jewish doctor who stitched him up and so on and so forth. So afterwards, I was speaking to one of the Tzal members who I knew, and I said, was it true that it couldn't wait till Matzah Shabbos? So he said, well, the situation was, it technically could have waited till Matzah Shabbos if the person would run out Matzah Shabbos, go to the emergency room, take care of it. We know he would not. He would wait till the next morning. Once he ready, it was the whole Shabbos. He would not rush. Even if we would tell him to, he wouldn't. So it's pikuach nefesh right now. So it's also something to take into consideration, where you know what you tell the person, you have to also think of how they'll take it. You know, if you tell them they can wait, and you know that even if you tell them that they have to go right Matzah Shabbos, they're not going to listen to you, and then that will turn it into pikuach nefesh. Then you have to take that into consideration as well. That's also an important point.
This might seem like a strange point,
yeah.
But it says here that Roben Ayadim Nivhalim Nefaktim is a. There's a difference between Jews and non-Jews.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience,
okay.
You know, Jews are so much more
cavalier or
no,
more nervous. The opposite, yeah.
Didactic and
uh-huh.
Nervous, or just paranoid. Well, and the non-Jews, is the Rove? Is that any of them? Is that just, you know? Is that the old society?
A smart doctor who knows the
road. I hear. It's a good question. I guess what you consider normal. But you can have a hypochondriac that, you know,
yeah.
Starts sneezing and he thinks
yeah.
He's dying.
Yeah.
Right, so I don't know.
But it's
yeah.
A very nice assessment.
Yeah.
How fearful is a common person
right.
To start a progression?
Okay.
I had a case
yeah.
On Shavuos. A kid
sure.
Came to me
yeah.
With clearly...
Yeah.